Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Work harder, work longer, and earn less because the mafia needs your money. That's a quote from trend forecaster Gerald Celenti. There's some truth to Gerald's quote, but what if things were different? What if you were a member of the mafia? Or better yet, what if you were at the top of the organized crime org chart? You could pretty much do whatever you wanted. In theory, anyway. Jake Lauffer is the writer and director of the Netflix docuseries How to Become a Mob Boss. But listen up. This is a satirical series featuring the hard-boiled narration of the one and only Peter Dinklage.
Look at yourself. Just another cog in the machine. You've tried doing things the right way, but the deck is stacked against you. I can show you how to get the money, power, and respect you've been denied for too long. It's inside this playbook. A series of tactics that the world's most powerful mob bosses use to become masters of their own destiny. One hit at a time.
As Jake explains, you are not to take any of this seriously. It's for entertainment purposes only. Think of How to Become a Mob Boss as a clever way to explore the lives and deaths of such iconic mob bosses as Al Capone and Pablo Escobar.
This is the third of a series. We've also did How to Become a Tyrant and How to Become a Cult Leader. And obviously the very premise that anybody should become a mob boss or a cult leader or a tyrant is preposterous on its face. And so when we decided that this was the approach we wanted to take, it stood out that we needed to make sure that people understood that this was satire, that this was not something that we are telling people they should be doing, but rather a fun exploration of, if you're so dedicated to amassing this sort of power, how would you go about doing it? And the only sort of guide through, you know, this sort of journey would have to be a character, a narrator character, who does have a very dark view of humanity. You know, when we tied that into, you know, characters that Dinklage has portrayed in the past, we landed on, if we're going to do this, we need to really sell this premise and show, like, this is how a devil on your shoulder would guide you into becoming the sort of thing, which led to a sardonic, satiric approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. I like the little devil on your shoulder. That really sums it up. And that it's a great approach to take because it's so unique and it's so entertaining. You wrote some very clever and very funny narration for Peter Dinklage.
The gangland giants who run the $2 trillion a year organized crime industry know the value of structure, public relations, and a diversified portfolio. Before you can flex your muscle as a boss, you need to follow the playbook's guide to climbing the corporate ladder.
What was your working relationship with Peter like?
Peter is a great collaborator. You know, we generally would have our scripts ready to go before we would get into session, but Peter would often have suggestions on how to make this, you know, feel more within his voice, how to make it even sharper and funnier and more to the point that we're trying to make. You know, it's been really amazing work with him. I'm such a big fan of his work, and just the fact that, you know, we were able to collaborate on this show was a lot of fun and a really cool experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you mentioned, you're also the brains behind two other similar series, How to Become a Tyrant and How to Become a Cult Leader. It seems to me that it would be wise for people interested in becoming mob bosses to also become tyrants and cult leaders. I think those positions would look great on their resumes. What do you think?
That's funny. You know, these are all shows are sort of all of a piece, and they all also comment on the current environment that we live in, politically and otherwise, where, you know, there is such a focus on amassing power, you might say, separate from ethical considerations. And what's interesting is you could argue it's a political show, but it's definitely not a partisan show. And we've gotten equal response on both sides of the political aisle, you know, particularly for shows like Tyrant, where they say, yes, this is like the tyranny we're experiencing right now. And, you know, some would say it's the tyranny of the left and some would say it's the tyranny of the right. You know, you can see all aspects of this in our society. Of the mob boss is a business show. It's about achieving money no matter what.
My boss is basically the CEO of an organization. And some of these organizations are very big, and some of them make an awful lot of money.
The first episode of How to Become a Mob Boss focuses on Al Capone. What can aspiring mob bosses learn from Capone's career?
Al Capone is definitely an embodiment of the American dream. You know, self-made man, son of immigrants, came with nothing. And through a combination of his business acumen and also a little bit of good luck, was able to make it to the top. I think, you know, the things we get into in the show are, you know, he made sure that he found mentors who helped him get his footing, you know, and put himself into position for success. Like, he didn't have his knives out for his mentors. He was supportive. And so that when the opportunity did come, he was able to seize it. And, you know, and so much of it also is just with so many of these mob bosses, it's about seeing an opportunity and taking it.
By the time he turned 30, Al Capone was king of the Chicago underworld, running a vast criminal empire that raked in over $100 million, while leaving a trail of bodies across the Windy City. But it's how he got started that will be your first lesson in self-improvement.
The second episode deals with Frank Lucas. Most people are probably familiar with the Denzel Washington portrayal. One of the things that is interesting about his story is he made a lot of money selling heroin, and he was born in North Carolina during segregation, right? And he saw his, I think it was 12-year-old cousin murdered by a member of the KKK.
Yes. A lot of these folks did have difficult origin stories, and it doesn't excuse who they became by any means, but it definitely seems to have colored his opinion on what is quote unquote polite society, what he would need to do to get ahead. And what he did was sell a very deadly product that ruined a lot of lives.
Mm-hmm. One of the big, I think, turning points, correct me if I'm wrong, in Frank's career as a mob boss was becoming involved in the French Connection. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, previously all heroin came through it was the Corsican Mafia at the time. What he did that was different and was very lucrative was he was able to develop a direct hookup to Southeast Asia, thus was able to maximize his profits without having to share as much with the mafia.
Mm-hmm. Frank had an interesting way of protecting his profits.
In New York, Frank knew everybody, so he had a nice connection, cleaning the money up for him.
He had a connection at Chemical Bank at the executive level. He would direct the tellers to take care of Frank when he came in.
And take care of him they did.
They would count hundreds of thousands of dollars in fives, tens, ones, and twenties, and the bank person he was working with would ask no questions and just change that money into $100 bills.
Like a true boss, Lucas invested his clean cash in legitimate tax-generating businesses.
He practically controlled an entire block in Harlem.
One characteristic of a lot of the mob bosses and the mob figures that we discuss was they did not want to be seen as villains in their community. This is something that was certainly true of someone like Pablo Escobar, who had a very, very active outreach campaign to the community. He built housing. He ran for political office. He built a zoo. He was somebody who very much cared about, you know, his public image. But I think with a lot of these folks, if they can garner support within their community and within important people within their community, it keeps the police off of their case. It's a lot easier to lock up somebody who is universally reviled than it is somebody who does have inroads in the community or in the police or in institutions that can protect them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Escobar story episode seems to be one of the most amazing stories just in terms of, as you mentioned, he ran for political office and actually served for a while before he was kicked out, and just he really sort of carved a wide swath across Colombia.
Most people would say he was the most powerful person in Colombia at the time. He had his fingers in everything.
He had political power. He was a hero within his community.
Un saludo muy especial.
He was ruthless with his enemies. Very Machiavellian, and he was a good business guy. You don't make $30 billion by accident.
There was a period where he was beloved by some. A lot of people saw him as a Robin Hood, and then he became one of the greatest murderous terrorists of all time. It's just the arc of the mob figure is they can be beloved for a period. They can do good things for some, but ultimately these are bad guys.
And I'm wondering, was that something you probably had to keep in mind while you were putting the series together, that you didn't want to glorify these mob bosses. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a tightrope act, and it has been with all of these shows, is how do you have a fun journey of imagining yourself in these people's positions without ever forgetting who these people are and the lives that they ruined. And that definitely started, you know, from the very beginning of this series with the Tyrant show. How do we do this and still be respectful and sensitive to the people who have suffered? It is a tightrope act, and hopefully, you know, people understand what we're trying to say with this series, and that we still don't shy away from the suffering and the horrors that these people did perpetrate.
Mm-hmm. We can't talk about mob bosses without talking about the master of manipulation, James Whitey Bulger. Bulger dominated Boston's criminal underworld for almost 20 years. What tactics did he use to pull this off?
There are those who, particularly his peers, who would say the way he pulled it off was by being a rat, was the fact that he did ultimately make inroads with the local FBI and had a source in there who he would exchange information with. But also part of it was the fact that he did keep everything so close to the vest. He was not high profile. He was not flashy. He kept an iron fist over his group, and he kept an eye on his money. And he was not out there in a public way like somebody like John Gotti.
One of the things that led to Bulger's success for so many years is that he preferred the shadows. He was more of a name that people had heard but never really seen. So even veteran investigators had never actually seen him.
People didn't know who he was. He was a ghost. He was somebody who was known and feared but not really recognizable.
Mm-hmm. So how did he get caught?
There was an ad that went on television. It actually featured his girlfriend at the time, Catherine Gregg, and asked if anybody has seen this person to call the authorities. And somebody who was a former Miss Iceland had befriended her over a cat. They bonded over their love of cats in California, and she called in a tip, and then the police came and took Whitey away.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite episode? Is there one episode that you think that, like, I think all six episodes are great, but do you have a one that you prefer over the others?
Episode 3, the Totorina episode, was really interesting just because he's somebody who I personally didn't know very much about before we started producing this. He's perhaps the most savage and murderous of them all, but what's interesting is just learning about the difference between the Sicilian mafia in Sicily and that which we understand from America. Like, it's very, very different than the Hollywood portrayal.
In the early 80s, there was a culture of fear because people saw bodies in the streets on almost a daily basis. People were terrified to go out. They were terrified to leave their houses.
Sicily is where the mafia began, but this is new and disturbing. Around 100 mafia executions so far this year.
The citizens were crying out to public officials to do something.
Rina was literally underground for his entire reign. People didn't know what he looked like, didn't know where he was living. They didn't know anything about him. And he was running this massive empire and ruling with such terror over his population. And then the Pablo Escobar episode. Escobar he's a monster, but he's a very colorful character. And there's a lot of just amazing footage of him out there, like riding ski-doos, and you see like the prison that he built for himself, just seeing how incredibly influential he became through crime. It sums up the series, both the perils and the possibilities of becoming a mob boss, which, again, I will say that ultimately what is important is to remember the perils of it.
Yes, very well said. Jake Lawford, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on How to Become a Mob Boss. I look forward to meeting you in person at the next Mob Boss Career Fair.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Jake Lawford is the writer and director of the Netflix docuseries How to Become a Mob Boss. He's also my fellow Canadian. Find out more and where to watch at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Dave Foley, Jesmyn Ward, and Jake Lawford.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Don't forget to subscribe to Beta on Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Be sure to offer a rating. That'll help us build our Alpha Army. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
And everything was going along just fine, too. And now, what are you, this enemy within situation?
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I hired you. I sign your paychecks. That's who I am.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I want to make clear this is an informal gathering with information traveling uphill from you to us.